Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, August 14th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, McGuire, Great Red Road Trail hits major milestone, bipartisan House resolution casts new shadow over future of northern spotted owl. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
The progress, future, and issues surrounding the Great Redwood Trail were discussed during a town hall event. Daniel Mintz reports.
Senator Mike McGuire described the one-third completion of the Great Redwood Trail as a major milestone during an online town hall event that included questions on funding, wildfire risks, and addressing homeless encampments. The Great Redwood Trail Agency is developing and managing the expansive northern section of the trail corridor, and Elaine Hogan, its executive director, said the ambitious trail project will be a game changer for rural economies, with over $100 million a year in revenue generation for the North Coast region. During the August 12th town hall, McGuire highlighted the recent opening of the southern segment of the Humboldt Bay Trail, which now spans 14 miles between the cities of Arcata and Eureka. A future phase will connect it to College of the Redwoods. McGuire said trail development will boost property values and rural economies.
Research shows that not only do trails increase property values, trails also decrease crime in the communities in which they traverse to. And it's a no-brainer, right? You put more eyeballs into a region and crime goes down. And research also shows that trails can increase property values. And in fact, the National Association of Realtors have found that having your home that is a close proximity to a trail increases your property value by about 5 to 15%. According to the Rails to Trails Conservancy, every dollar invested in constructing a trail generates about $3 in economic benefits. So in the coming years, these completed segments will be game changers, especially for rural communities in which the trail is going to be traversing through.
Openings of new trail segments in Willits and Ukiah are set for 2026, adding to what's mapped as a 320-mile contiguous trail from the San Francisco Bay Area to Humboldt Bay. Answering a question on how the trail will be maintained, Hogan said much of the northern segment will be low-maintenance, backcountry gravel trail. A notable funding source is Proposition 4, a voter-approved $10 billion bond for a variety of projects, including trails development and maintenance. On potential wildfires related to trail use, McGuire said trail development is accompanied by assistance to rural fire districts. He asked Hogan to elaborate.
For all the reasons you just described, that is really why we see trail development as an opportunity to strengthen our rural public safety infrastructure. This is an opportunity to bring resources to the North Coast, not to deplete already taxed resources. And so I think that's an important point moving forward to recognize that as we develop these partnerships and clear emergency response protocols, that has a benefit to the entire community and to all of those rural property owners that are out there in these what will become these backcountry trail segments. And as we take on development of those backcountry segments and the more remote areas, GRTA will also have its own trained staff that are stationed out there as wilderness first responders, and perhaps will become members of the volunteer fire department. So we're really going to bring resources into those local areas to be able to address any issues.
Asked about the opposition to the trail by landowners and tribes, Hogan said input from them is already shaping the project and are included as recommendations in the trail's master plan. Next steps include contracting with tribes for protection of cultural resources and what Hogan described as co-management agreements. On addressing homeless camps, Hogan said her agency is working on it with outreach, referring people to services, and cleanups.
We are taking a proactive, prevention-first approach to homelessness along those undeveloped segments of the trail. And those are the segments that the Great Redwood Trail Agency manages. So those are trail segments that are not yet developed. They're not open to the public. They do not have appropriate amenities like campgrounds and trash cans and bathrooms and things like that. And so our approach to property management that our board has recently supported at our July meeting is really about building trust and reducing environmental damage and improving safety on those areas of our property. So the contracts that were recently authorized in Humboldt and Mendocino counties will allow us to partner with community-based organizations and local businesses to provide regular outreach, case management referrals, and connections to shelter and healthcare while keeping our property clean and safe.
A potential flip side of economic development was brought up when a Garberville resident asked about whether residents will be, quote, priced out of their communities due to the trail. Saying it's a really important question, McGuire said rural areas have been underinvested. And, quote, we know throughout the world these trails are huge economic drivers, especially for rural parts of the country or the state they exist in. Hogan said her agency will, quote, listen to those rural artisans and back to the landers who have been here for generations and see if things like farm-to-table dining and low-impact camping can offer new income for them. A final project completion date hasn't been determined, but trail segments will be developed in stages over the next 20 years. And McGuire concluded by saying, quote, we're going to do this right, not fast. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The future of the northern spotted owls, which has been close to extinction for decades, was plunged further into doubt recently by bipartisan resolution being proposed in the U.S. House of Representatives. KMUD Sigur Bjorn has this story.
The effort to save the endangered northern spotted owl recently hit a setback when a bipartisan group of U.S. House representatives introduced a resolution to scrap the plan to help the fragile species bounce back from decades of decline. The plan, finalized in 2024, called for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to cull the invasive barred owl, which has been rapidly crowding out the native spotted owl in forest lands ranging from Northern California to Canada's British Columbia. This range is the home and breeding ground of the northern spotted owl. Or at least it used to be.
Spotted owls are extinct in the wild in British Columbia. They're nearly extinct in Washington State. They're doing poorly in Oregon, and they're not doing well in California, but we have the strongest populations at this moment.
That's Tom Wheeler with the Arcata-based Environmental Protection Information Center, speaking to KMUD about the perils facing the northern spotted owl. As previously reported by KMUD, EPIC is involved in a lawsuit the timber industry has launched to gain access to 3.5 million acres of forest land, which is currently exempt from logging because it's considered critical habitat to the northern spotted owl. That lawsuit is ongoing, but now, on top of it, comes this bipartisan resolution to scrap the plan to cull the barred owl. The plan calls for approximately 450,000 barred owls to be killed over a 30-year period in forests native to the northern spotted owl. It's a controversial plan that has landed both environmental and animal welfare organizations on opposite sides. So far, those in favor of the cull have prevailed, resulting in the Fish and Wildlife Service setting the 30-year plan in motion last year. However, the House resolution set forth by Texas Republican Troy Nels looks set to end this plan. Nels called the plan, quote, a waste of Americans' hard-earned tax dollars, end quote. The resolution is backed by seven California representatives, including three Democrats. None of the lawmakers involved happen to represent districts that are close to the spotted owl's habitat, which stretches as far south as Marin County. The northernmost representative backing the resolution represents Tracy in San Joaquin County, 70 miles inland of Marin. A number of animal rights organizations have backed Nels's resolution, with Wayne Paschel of Animal Wellness Action telling several outlets that while, quote, Protecting the spotted owl is an imperative. Assaulting other native wildlife occupying the same forests is not ethical or practical. End quote. However, environmental organizations, such as the Arcata-based EPIC, are firmly in favor of the cull. Here is Tom Wheeler again.
We support barred owl removal. It is a topic that is often difficult to talk about because barred owls themselves are charismatic, and within their native range, they're absolutely deserving of our respect and our protection. Here in California, they're an invasive species. They're not native to our area, and they're causing profound impacts. So we believe that we need to manage populations. We need to physically kill barred owls in areas where they're outcompeting spotted owls. So we are in court right now defending the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and their barred owl management strategy against attack by animal rights groups.
Despite being listed as a threatened species in 1990, the northern spotted owl has failed to prosper.
Since 1990, we've continued to have habitat loss. Some of that comes from things like logging. Other habitat loss comes from other sorts of development or comes from fire. And now we are piling on top barred owls, this kind of new emergent threat to northern spotted owls. And the synergistic effect of all of these things, of past and present habitat loss together with barred owls, is rapidly driving this species towards extinction.
The reason the barred owl is such a pox on the northern spotted owl is its adaptability and prolific procreational abilities. The spotted owl can only live in old growth and mature forests, whereas the barred owl can live just about anywhere, including in towns and cities.
I have a friend who lives in Portland, and she sent me a text this morning that she was woken up in the middle of the night in Portland by a barred owl. So when we log spotted owl habitat, when we take these old forests and we turn them into young forests, what we're doing is we're taking all that area offline for northern spotted owls, but we're not taking it offline for their main competitor, the barred owl.
The barred owl also loves mature and old-growth forests, where its size and aggression means it beats the northern spotted owl to its food source. On top of it, a female barred owl may hatch 2 to 3 chicks a year, whereas the spotted owl may go several years without procreating. Defending the culling of the barred owl in court, as EPIC is doing, is one thing. Preventing Congress from passing a resolution is quite another. However, several environmental organizations, including the Sierra Club and several regional arms of the Audubon Society, are already pressuring members of Congress to oppose the resolution. They maintain that the backers of the resolution are grossly misrepresenting the cost of the plan, which they say will be confined to a maximum of $12 million a year, which over the 30 years comes to $1 billion less than the $1.3 billion opponents of the barred owl culling plan claim. As Kay Mudd has reported before, there is more at stake here than the future of the northern spotted owl. Because of the owl's place on the endangered species list, it is the first, last, and best defense available to environmentalists to prevent old and mature growth forests from being logged. It's estimated that only about 4% of California's old growth redwoods remain. This is prime spotted owl habitat. And if the spotted owl loses further ground to the barred owl or goes extinct, it becomes that much harder to defend old growth forests from being logged. The battle between those for and opposed to culling the barred owl continues, and we are here to keep you informed as events unfold. I'm Sigurd Bjørn, reporting for KMUD.
In state news, California bill would help foster kids recover after natural disasters. Suzanne Potter reports.
A bill before state lawmakers would help foster children and their families recover from natural disasters like fires and floods. At the end of August, the state Senate Appropriations Committee will decide whether to pass Assembly Bill 689, which would create a $2 million statewide child welfare disaster response fund. Susanna Niffen with the nonprofit Children Now says the fund would cover urgent needs like transportation, interim housing, and replacement of essential belongings.
If the state is financially responsible for children and families in foster care, then they need to step up in moments of great harm and do something for these kids and families.
California is home to just under 40,000 foster kids, and there is no dedicated financial disaster assistance for them or their foster families. The state established the Child Welfare Services Disaster Planning and Response Unit in 2021, but it doesn't provide direct grants. It only provides additional support to county agencies during a disaster. In January, the Palisades and Eaton fires burned more than 11,000 properties, including many belonging to foster families. Niffen says when a natural disaster strikes, instability can disrupt the placement of foster children, making their lives even harder.
Last year, there were 148 foster youth impacted by natural disasters. This year, it has already exploded. As of May 6th of this year, there were already 264 foster youth impacted, and that was because of the Los Angeles and Ventura fires.
The bill passed the Assembly and Senate policy committees and was referred to the Senate Appropriations Suspense File, where it awaits further action. A similar bill failed in the suspense file during the last legislative session. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, killing of Al Jazeera journalists sparks international outrage and protests. KPFA's Lauren Schmidt reports.
Global condemnation of the targeted killing of Al Jazeera's news team has spilled into the streets of major cities around the world, including San Francisco, where hundreds of protesters marched through Union Square. Organized by the Bay Area Palestinian Youth Movement, the protest was marked by grief and outrage, with many in tears as some of the last remaining journalists in Gaza are being killed and starved. Protesters accused Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extremist government of trying to, quote, sever Gaza's lifeline to the world by eliminating Palestinian reporters ahead of a planned ground invasion to take over Gaza.
Israel murdered these journalists just after announcing its plan to invade Gaza City. Before his martyrdom, Anas warned of the impending assault, calling on the world to act. This is not new! The strategy to eliminate those who bear witness to their crimes, Israel has always lied with impunity because the Western press has given it license and airtime to do so.
Six journalists were murdered in Israel's August 10th strike on Gaza City, the single deadliest attack on the press during Israel's assault on Gaza. Notably, all of the deadliest single attacks in this conflict have been deliberate killings, which the Committee to Protect Journalists, an independent nonprofit organization that promotes press freedom worldwide, defines as murders of journalists for their work. So far in 2025, Israel has killed 13 journalists. That's up from 10 in all of 2024. Since the war broke out, 190 journalists and media workers have died, surpassing the total number of journalists killed worldwide in the previous 3 years combined, marking the deadliest period for the press since the CPJ began tracking journalist fatalities. The committee says that the targeted killing of Anas al-Sharif and his Al Jazeera colleagues sends a stark message. If Israel can kill the most prominent Gazan journalist, it can kill anyone. Mourners in San Francisco's Union Square called out mainstream media for what they described as complicity.
For over 675 days of the genocide, they endured unimaginable conditions to carry Gaza's voices and images to the world. They sacrificed their lives to broadcast the truth, exposing Zionist war crimes of destruction, starvation, and annihilation. And yet Western media failed them, choosing complicity over truth. Western news outlets have censored, distorted, and neglected Gaza's reality, whitewashing Israel's crimes, amplifying racist propaganda to justify mass be held to account for propagandizing the extermination of our people.
The UN has condemned the targeted attack on journalists, calling it a grave breach of international law. The Committee to Protect Journalists stated that the world needs to see these attacks for what they are, quote, a deliberate and systematic attempt to cover up Israel's actions, close quote. With international press barred from entering the besieged territory, the world relies on Palestinian journalists who are themselves facing starvation and constant danger. Salah Nayem, the news director at Al Jazeera English, said it is very difficult to get reporters into Gaza and is calling on other news organizations to step up. Protesters are urging national media outlets to rise to the occasion and support Palestinian journalists.
We call on all organizations, media sites, press unions, journalists, and supporters of justice worldwide to act now for Gaza before it is wiped off the map. We ask that they target national and local media outlets, because if the world looks away, Gaza's annihilation will happen in darkness. We must act now and call on all media organizations to amplify voices from Gaza before it is too late. We demand an end to the blockade on foreign press entry into Gaza, an investigation and a prosecution of those responsible for killing our journalists.
Protesters marched from Union Square to the Reuters corporate office in San Francisco, where they displayed a cardboard cutout representing journalists, marked with press vests covered in blood and target symbols, surrounded by candles and photos of the slain Al Jazeera.
That it is our responsibility, our duty, to hold news outlets responsible. News outlets like Reuters, here in this office building, we hold them responsible for their complicity in the genocide.
American media outlets, including the New York Times, have been called out for passive media bias in their coverage of Gaza, especially when compared to their reporting on Ukraine. IDF officials have repeatedly told media outlets that the army does not deliberately target journalists. In a statement announcing the killing of Al-Sharif, Israel's military accused the journalist of heading a Hamas cell and of advancing rocket attacks against Israeli civilians and troops. However, those claims are unsubstantiated, and Israel has a long-standing, documented pattern of accusing journalists of being terrorists without providing any credible proof. The Committee to Protect Journalists has joined 15 other media and human rights organizations in a joint letter demanding an end to the forced starvation and targeted killing of journalists in Gaza. KPFA News has also issued a statement condemning the murder of journalists, which you can read on our website, kpfa.org. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Hunters from Point Lay in Alaska will collaborate with an anthropologist from Russia this summer to document traditional knowledge about walruses. It's an important part of recording traditions, and as Ayulna Naiden reports for the Alaska Desk, maintaining collaboration across the Arctic.
Growing up, Robert Kaumaluk Lisburn remembers walruses starting to beach near Point Lay in large numbers. It was always an exciting time for local hunters, but he says a stream of boats and gunfire startled the animals, causing them to rush to water and crush some of the young pups. Since then, Lisburn says hunting practices have changed.
We gotta find a better way to hunt these animals without causing the stampede.
Lisburn says Point Lay residents now try to hunt walruses when there are only a few of them on the beach. Lisburn will share his knowledge about walruses with the U.S. Geological Survey and the University of Alaska Museum of the North later this summer. The project will include a walrus drone survey and interviews with local hunters. Eduard Kirkitagins-Dorr is an anthropology postdoctoral fellow at the University of Alaska Fairbanks who will help with the interviews.
This is about how to help local community to deal with modern challenges, including climate change.
Zdor is a Chukchi indigenous leader, originally from Chukotka in eastern Russia, where walrus is also a traditional subsistence resource. He also researched and advocated for subsistence hunting back home. Walrus research is one of many areas where Russian and American scientists used to work together. Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022 put a strain on research collaborations. Zdor says he would like this project to be a link between Chukotka and Alaska.
This is what we are dreaming about, me and people like me here in Alaska and in Russia as well.
In Alaska's Arctic, female walruses traditionally rest on sea ice. But the ice cover has been declining in the Arctic, and animals started to come to Point Lay beaches in recent years. Lisburn has been working with walrus biologists, making sure they follow safety protocols during regular surveys.
We're protecting the animals.
After the project is done, Zdor says he hopes Lisburn will continue documenting local knowledge. In Anchorage, I am Alena Naidin.
In South Dakota, the Humanities Council delivers more than 13,000 free books for third-grade students across the state. It's part of the annual Young Readers Program and aims to help get students at every private, public, tribal, or homeschool reading. The Young Readers One book selection for 2025 is Wings of an Eagle, The Gold Medal Dreams of Billy Mills. The book tells the story of the Oglala Lakota Olympic gold medalist and features illustrations by artist S.D. Nelson, who's also Lakota. The book tells Mills' story, his journey from Pine Ridge all the way to his ultimate destination as a world-class Olympian. With his last-second dash for the gold and the 10,000-meter race at the 1964 Tokyo Olympics. The Yurok tribe is hosting its Klamath Salmon Festival Saturday in Klamath, California. The family-friendly day features a number of events, including music, basket-weaving demonstrations, and stickball. Chairman Joseph James says this year's celebration is special, pointing to the Klamath River. He says it looks better than any other time in living memory due to dam removal and restoration. The last of four dams was removed in August of last year, and according to the tribe, a month after the removal, thousands of salmon started to repopulate the newly free flowing part of the river. But there will be no salmon at the festival due to this year's fish forecast being below average. The tribe is confident salmon runs will recover. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Patricia Tinkler, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Sierra Bjorn, Suzanne Potter, Lauren Schmidt, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@KMUD.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.